VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and/or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. Meghan Markle is married. You can all tune into the radio now. And this is the VanWee Financial Hour. We decided to show up today because my invitation had to be declined, and Adam said his got lost in the mail. So here we are. Anyway, I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And as I said, now that all the formal stuff is over, why don't you sit back a little bit and spend an hour with us, and we'll talk about some things that affect real people instead of imaginary people in some other land far, far away. It's a good week to talk about money. It's a good week to talk about the market, and not because it went up necessarily, but because what's going on right now is, I guess, important to what's going to lay out for the rest of the year. And we think there's a lot of what the market likes to call consolidation going on out there, which I would rephrase that to getting ready to go up. That is the way I see it. I'll see if Adam agrees with me. I didn't run it past him. Anyway, welcome to all the regulars. Thanks for being back again. We live for that, of course. And if you're either driving by or someone told you to listen to the show, welcome. Try to stick around for the hour, and I promise you, you will learn something worthwhile here. I know you haven't so far, but we'll get over that. Anyway, you know, we're not like some shows. Most of the shows you hear are pre-recorded, and they talk about what they want to talk about for an hour or two, and most of the time bore you to tears. We are not like that. Yes, we will talk about what we want to talk about as long as nobody calls in, but if you want to talk about what you want to talk about, it's as simple as picking up the phone and dialing 904-222-TALK. It's 222-8255. Callers, as always, will go directly to the head of the line, and we will put you on air. Don't be afraid. We don't bite. There are no questions that are too simple. Remember, your job as the audience is to make us look good. The easier the question, the better we look. So have at it. You know that for everything you don't know, there are an awful lot of people out there who don't know it either, and they're not willing, as most people aren't, to call the show and potentially embarrass themselves, but we promise to leave you unembarrassed no matter what. If you don't know something fairly simple, you're not going to ever get educated. We just passed through Financial Education or Literacy Month in April, and basically the point of the show is that we're trying to add to the financial literacy of the listeners. It can only help you in the long run, and Adam's going to talk about that today, strangely enough, in a more or less indirect way, about some changes that people should make in their habits, and it's not a generation or two, it's everybody. And if the sooner you learn some of these lessons, the better. So hang on and listen to what he has to say. And maybe if you can't do it, maybe you can help your kids. That's important. Anyway, another week in the market, not full of green numbers, but I like what's setting up. How about you?
I do. I really like it. But the other good thing about this week was we saw all three indexes fall, not by very much. But the good news was we actually had a bunch of client accounts that were up this week. And why was that? Well, there was a number of reasons. But for one thing, small caps and mid caps outperformed. The S&P, the NASDAQ, and the Dow all track basically large cap stocks. So you don't really see the effect of when small caps outperform, which they haven't done in quite some time until recently. You don't see that in the major indexes. So we saw a bunch of accounts actually go up this week, despite the Dow actually fell 0.5%, the S&P fell 0.5%, the NASDAQ fell 0.7%. but May is actually turning into a pretty good month here. If you hadn't noticed, in May, the Dow is up 2.3%, the S&P up 2.5%, and the NASDAQ up 4.1%. So May is looking pretty good. And for the year, the only major index that's down is the Dow, and it's down 4 points. And no, it's not 4% not percentage points.
Either.
It's right. 4 Dow points, yeah. which is
it rounds
translated
off to 0.
Into
0.
Nothing. Yeah. So it's been, it hasn't been a bad year. It's been a really good month and a pretty good quarter, I would say. So
yeah,
just kind of keep an eye on that.
Yeah, we're on the heels of a great year.
Yeah.
If everything's averaging out nicely, it's like last week indices go up over 2%. This week they pull back a half. Man, that's a nice two-week period.
It is, and it really feels like the market is consolidating right now just to make another leg higher. That's what I think.
We're having a lot of sector rotation, too, where
yes.
former losers are now becoming winners.
Energy is the second best performing sector on the S&P this year. That is a surprise to a lot of people. A lot of people did not see that coming.
Oil prices are hanging above 70
mm-hmm.
so far.
Yeah, I thought they'd top out around high 60s, but they actually pushed through and they're staying in the low 70s. So
yeah, OPEC's
a little bit higher.
Made some moves and there's some Middle East turmoil. Oh, is that news?
Isn't that
this is a recording?
Yeah, exactly. The U.S. stocks did okay. Well, they drifted a little bit lower this week, but foreign countries actually got hit pretty hard. And some in particular, Brazil dropped almost 6.5% this week alone, while Mexico dropped more than 5%, and Italy didn't fare much better, dropping about 4.5% all this week. So those were some markets that were actually doing sort of well earlier this year, and we've seen that reverse pretty hard.
They did well while the dollar was falling, but now
Correct.
It's rising, and it's hurting them and helping us.
And helping small caps in particular. The commodity index had another nice week. It rose more than 1.5%. Oil and natural gas both rose more than 1%, while gold fell 2% and silver was down about 1.5%. But the index is now up more than 9% this year. A little sign of life in
Despite
an otherwise...
the metals.
Yeah, exactly.
The metals are just acting...
It's got to be inflation-driven,
reaction.
I
yeah.
would think.
Yeah, the metals are total reaction to the dollar strength.
Mm-hmm.
It costs the same in dollars. The dollar just buys more of other things now.
The bond market's kind of struggled this year, if you hadn't noticed. The overall market dropped another 0.5% this week. AGG is the ETF that tracks that. It was down about 0.5%. Long treasuries were hurt the most. They fell more than 1.5% during the week. And short treasuries actually rose 1 basis point. So, again, this is why we've been telling you keep your durations really short. And during this period of rising interest rates, it will benefit you in the long run.
Percentage chance of an interest rate increase next month?
100?
Yep-ish. We're rounding it.
Yeah, that's what I'm guessing.
There might be a 99.9 something in there, but we'll round it to 100.
Yeah, I think
it's going to happen.
I agree. Walmart reported this week. It's sort of the unofficial end to the quarter one earnings season. The earnings beat rate closed at 67.9%, down
nice.
Slightly from last quarter, but still a really good number. Expectations were really through the roof heading into this quarter, and so that makes the beat rate look even better. On the revenue side, the beat rate closed at 71.6, also down slightly from last quarter, but again, really solid number. The best news we saw from earnings season, though, was forward guidance. The majority of companies raised guidance for their business, meaning that they expect conditions to get even better in the future. So that's really positive news. Strongest beat rates were in industrials, financials, and tech for earnings. And industrials, tech, and real estate saw the best revenue beat rates. And earnings in the S&P 500 are up 24% year over year in quarter one. And forecasts place the rest of the year at more than 20% growth.
You know, before numbers started coming out a very few weeks ago, that estimate was 16%
right.
year over year. It came in at 24%.
So really good quarter.
That's astronomical.
Yeah, you don't see
numbers
like that
often.
All
of this stuff, all the numbers that we're giving you on here are based on higher expectations,
mm-hmm.
and they're beating higher expectations. Things are good, people. If you look at the four-week average of unemployment claims, you've got to go back to 1973 to have a rate that low. Once again, if you need a job, go get one. If you don't like your job, get a better one. You can do it. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back and continue. This is the Banway Financial Hour.
Does your roof?
Welcome back to the Banway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Banway.
And I'm Adam Banway.
And we have a trivia question sponsored by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. Call Ken at 636-7888. Adam and I have been talking a lot about younger people just in the breaks and such. And I'm going to sort of slant this that way for the trivia question today, and he's going to talk a lot more about it as the day goes on. But one of the biggies for younger people is Facebook. Most of the young people seem to have some presence on it. It was 6 years ago yesterday, Facebook went public. It's been pretty successful. If you had put $1,000 into Facebook 6 years ago yesterday, what would it be worth today? And I'll take that within plus or minus $200. How about that? So they didn't get it from me, by the way.
What's that?
That price increase in Facebook.
Oh, okay.
No, wasn't because of my demand. It's graduation month, May. 20 years ago, there was a rumor that Kurt Vonnegut, remember him, anybody? Wrote Slaughterhouse-Five. Mm-hmm. There was a rumor that he had written and delivered a graduation speech. Well, as it turns out, he neither wrote it nor delivered it. So it's been called now for 20 years the most popular speech he never wrote or delivered. It was actually written by Mary Schmitz, and boy, is that a tough one to say, S-C-H-M-I-C-H, from the Chicago Tribune. And my research department was just thinking about such things the other day and looked it up and found it, and we thought it would be fun to read it. Anybody graduate in 98 that you know, Adam?
I'm trying to think. I remember someone.
It might be what, you?
Yeah, from college.
So 20 years ago, this is, I think you'll enjoy it. It's still, in many, many respects, I think, it is very germane to today, and especially down here. Remember, she's from Chicago. Ladies and gentlemen of the class of 98, wear sunscreen. If I could offer you only one tip for the future, sunscreen would be it. The long-term benefits of sunscreen have been proven by scientists, whereas the rest of my advice has no basis more reliable than my own meandering experience. I will dispense this advice now. Enjoy the power and beauty of your youth. Oh, never mind. You'll not understand the power and beauty of your youth until they faded. But trust me, in 20 years, you'll look back at photos of yourself and recall in a way you can't grasp now how much possibility lay before you and how fabulous you really looked. You're not as fat as you imagine. Don't worry about the future. Or worry, but know that worrying is effective as trying to solve an algebra equation by chewing bubble gum. The real troubles in your life are apt to be things that never crossed your worried mind. The kind that blindside you at 4 p.m. on some idle Tuesday. Do one thing every day that scares you. Sing. Don't be reckless with other people's hearts. Don't put up with people who are reckless with yours. Floss. Don't waste your time on jealousy. Sometimes you're ahead, sometimes you're behind. The race is long, and in the end, it's only with yourself. Remember compliments you receive. Forget the insults. If you succeed in doing this, tell me how. Keep your old love letters. Throw away your old bank statements. Stretch. Don't feel guilty if you don't know what you want to do with your life. The most interesting people I know don't know at 22 what they wanted to do with their lives. Some of the most interesting 40-year-olds I know still don't. Get plenty of calcium. Be kind to your knees. You'll miss them when they're gone. Maybe you'll marry. Maybe you won't. Maybe you'll have children. Maybe you won't. Maybe you'll divorce at 40. Maybe you'll dance a funky chicken on your 75th wedding anniversary. God, I hope not. Whatever you do, don't congratulate yourself too much or berate yourself either. Your choices are half chance. So are everybody else's. Enjoy your body. Use it every way you can. Don't be afraid of it or what other people think of it. It's the greatest instrument you'll ever own. Dance even if you have nowhere to do it but your living room. Read the directions, even if you don't follow them. Do not read beauty magazines. They will only make you feel ugly. Get to know your parents. You never know when they'll be gone for good. Be nice to your siblings. They're your best link to your past and the people most likely to stick with you in the future. Understand that friends come and go, but with a precious few, you should hold on. Work hard to bridge gaps in geography and lifestyle, because the older you get, the more you need the people you knew when you were young. Live in New York City once, but leave before it makes you hard. Live in Northern California once, but leave before it makes you soft. Travel. Accept certain inalienable truths. Prices will rise. Politicians will philander. You, too, will get old. And when you do, you'll fantasize that when you were young, prices were reasonable, politicians were noble, and children respected their elders. Respect your elders. Don't expect anyone else to support you. Maybe you have a trust fund. Maybe you have a wealthy spouse, but you never know when either one might run out. Don't mess too much with your hair, or by the time you're 40, it will look 85. Be careful whose advice you buy, but be patient with those who supply it. Advice is a form of nostalgia. Dispensing it is a way of fishing the past from the disposal, wiping it off, painting over the ugly parts, and recycling it for more than it's worth. But trust me on the sunscreen. Not bad.
Pretty good.
20 years later, a lot of that has hit home to a lot of people, I believe. And graduates of 2018, I would tell you one thing, and one thing ahead of anything else, you are very lucky.
It's a good year to get out.
If you have any kind of a halfway civilized degree and any ambition and are really truly looking for a career, you could not pick a better time to get into that market than right now. So maybe you want to reconsider if you're going to spend a year abroad or something like that. The money you will make if you get into a good job now is so much more than what it would have been just a few years ago when we were still going through economic misery. And that, if you look another 20 years forward, will really, really make a difference in your ultimate goal, which is financial independence. At least if it isn't, it will be someday.
Yeah, but don't skip out on a year abroad. Traveling now while you can is the best thing you can do for yourself.
But don't take a full year or take a job and tell me you want a vacation.
It's terrible advice.
Yeah, well, see, 20 years is not enough to fully grow up.
Yeah, but if you don't do it now, you're going to say, I'll do it sometime later, and then you'll never do it, and you'll regret it the rest of your life.
Yeah,
trust me.
Maybe something of that, but I'd sure as heck try to lock into the job right now.
No way. You can always work.
See, that's why there are two of us in different generations. You get a full-blown, well, all you got to do is take the advice from one of us. You'll always be right.
That's right.
Although we do agree on almost everything, there are some other little things that we may take exception to with each other. That's okay. That's why in our business we tell people we do things together, and largely for that reason, that you get a broad perspective. We have different backgrounds, similar in that we've got educated well and that sort of thing. We've worked outside the industry for a long time, and now we're both in it. But we bring perspective based on age, experience, education, all that stuff to the table that you can't really get by talking to any other one person. So he said, tooting his own horn a little bit, shameless self-promotion minute.
Yeah. Speaking of shameless self-promotion, I had the opportunity to do a something a little bit unique this week. I was actually interviewed on TV, which was pretty fun. It was for a it was on the local news, and I was doing a volunteering my time at a phone bank as part of Wise Money Week, which is put on by a local organization called Family Foundations. Really great organization. What we did was went to the local news station, and they, during their broadcast, they ran a number on the screen, and people could call in and get free financial advice from a bunch of CFPs associated with the Financial Planning Association. I was one of those. So during the second half of the broadcast, they pulled me up and asked me a few questions. And I'll tell you what, after doing radio for more than three years now, TV is a whole bit different ballgame. When there's a big camera in your face, it's a little bit nerve-wracking. I think I held it together, but it was pretty crazy.
What we do with our hands during a radio broadcast,
exactly.
No one cares. But when you're on TV, everybody's looking at it. Are you fidgety or what?
No doubt. So I have a lot of respect for people who do TV, because I don't know that I could do it all the time. Radio might be more my thing.
Well, I've always said, actually, it's not me, it's my wife, always said I had a good face for radio. And I think that's all I need to say about that.
Fair enough.
Yeah. We're almost out of time in this one. I don't want to get into the long ones. I wanted to bring up a bad boy with a point moment. William Jordan of Laguna Hills, California, settled civil fraud charges in the U.S. District Court on Tuesday. His violations of the Advisors Act and the SEC Act amounted to bilking about 100 clients of $71 million.
Wow.
For 16 private investment funds. Mm. He lied about how their funds would be invested. He was once recognized a five-star wealth manager, author of 7% Solution, which produce supposedly 7% returns, which seems to me like falling off a log, but whatever. In August of 17, they revoked his license. Now, what he did, and you probably never heard of these, he said he'd invest in profitable businesses, fixed income alternatives, or beachfront property. His main investment, though, was trust deeds. Know what a trust deed is?
I do not.
I didn't either, so I looked it up. He misrepresented the value of the assets using inflated values and unrealized profits. And through these things called trust deeds, the SEC held that it was something of a Ponzi scheme.
Sounds like
what, what rules did these investors violate? Which of Stephen Adams' rules? You can't go to a third-party website that everybody knows about and see your account 24 hours a day, every single minute, and every transaction. Then you're investing with the wrong people. That was the violation. All right, we've got to take a break. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Van Wee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and/or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And good morning, Chuck.
Hey, what would the Steve and Adam Van Wee show be without the Chucks are calling in?
Boring, monotonous, long-winded, you know, all those things.
Hey, Adam, I just had to call in when you talked about being on TV. So I remember Jim Nantz telling a story of how when he was a young broadcaster getting into the business, and Jim McKay gave him some good advice. He said, when you look into the camera, pretend it's you're talking to one person.
Mm-hmm. That's a great advice, because that's kind of what got me through it. I was actually being interviewed by one of the on-air personalities there, and that's exactly what he told me. It's just a conversation with me. Just look at me, and that's how I approached it, and like I said, I think I did okay, but internally I was feeling very nervous at the time, but I did get through it, so that's great advice.
It depends how well you know Adam. If you know him really well, you could see he was nervous, but otherwise it probably looked pretty normal.
Yeah, that was my assessment watching it after the fact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we tell people when we have an occasional guest on the show, we sit them down beforehand and say, okay, you're just talking to me.
Right.
And that we look right square at each other, because we're on two sides of the table, and we can see eye to eye. And I've never seen anybody really lose it at all. They've been good. So I think it's, as Adam said, it's so much easier on radio.
For sure.
That TV thing scares anybody. That was good advice. You know, Jim Nantz will never amount to anything, though. I'd like to buy him for what he was worth on that day and sell him for what he's worth today.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's amazing. I mean, I watch the final round of the Masters on YouTube a lot, and you know, he's just such a great sports broadcaster. I mean, he could have done news too, but he's just so good at what he does.
Well, I just wonder, is his memory as good as it seems, or does he have the world's fastest computer? And my memory gets a lot better. I've been doing radio now for 16 years or something like that. And I've noticed that I get a lot smarter with the speed of the internet connection. It's incredible how much you know when the speed of the connection is up there. But he knows stuff and remembers stuff that it's just uncanny. I don't know. He's either brilliant or, like I say, he's got the best computer in the world. Or both.
Well, I just think he's so passionate about what he does that it's easy to remember this stuff.
Most successful people are, so that makes sense.
Yeah, and he was there for a lot of it, too, and I think that makes a difference.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. Storybook career, no doubt about it.
Chuck, did you hear the trivia question?
Yeah, I want to take a shot at it. What was it, $1,000?
Yes, $1,000 6 years ago yesterday. What's it worth today?
I'm going to say
$9,000. You're a little too high, but you're on the right track. But it was a very good guess. And there have been some companies that probably would have happened.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But yeah, they're not. Facebook's growth has been really solid, but not like some of the other Because they actually IPO'd when they were already fairly big, so that made,
exactly
makes a
right.
difference.
Yep, exactly right. It came out, didn't come out at 50 cents or anything
right,
like that.
Right.
But you're on the right track. You're definitely thinking right. So we appreciate it.
I remember when it IPO'd around 39, mm-hmm. and then it went down to 20.
Right.
It
usually does.
And then I remember.
No, usually they go up.
They usually go up, yeah. and then they fall right. down below, and that's when you want to get them. It's right. after the first dip takes place. If you're going to buy them, that's the time.
I remember Mark Cuban said he sold his Facebook. He got tired of it going dripping down into the 20s, and wow, that was a bad decision by him. But he makes a lot of great decisions, but that was a bad one.
You know, yeah. What's funny about Mark is if you watch him on Shark Tank, stocks are definitely not his thing because mm-hmm. They were asking him what he was invested in like a year ago, and his answer was, I've been invested in a lot of MLPs. And if you follow the markets, you know that MLPs have been a terrible investment over the last 5 years. And so I don't know. He's really good at everything else he does, but stock investing doesn't seem to be his thing.
I don't like him.
He's an anti-Trumper for sure.
Yep. Yeah.
Well, I mean, he did hit a home run on Netflix, to be fair. I mean, he bought Netflix many years ago.
Did he?
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
Okay.
You only have to be, I don't know if it's lucky or good, you only have to hit once in a while.
True.
You can lose a few.
Maybe he's just the type of guy that isn't afraid to talk about his losses, so that's why it comes across that
way. Could be. Yeah, maybe I underestimate him for that. Maybe not. I just don't like him. There's something about him that just feels kind of creepy to me, but that's a personal opinion.
Anyways.
Yeah, I'd say it to his face. What the heck? Right. Anyway.
But thank you, guys. So I hope you have a great day.
Well, we appreciate the call. Enjoy the weekend. Stay dry. All right, we have a bracket.
Yep.
It did not go down from $1,000. That purchase would not have gone down. So the bracket is between $1,000 and $9,000. Get it within $200, and you will be the winner. All right, you want to talk a little bit about young people?
Yeah, well, not necessarily just young people.
People.
Yeah, people in general. There was an article put up on MarketWatch. It was about a week ago, and you can go back and Google it. It was about giving sort of guidelines. And it was just referencing another study that had been done by one of the major investment companies saying, and one of the points was that that at certain milestones age-wise in your life, you should have saved a certain percentage of your salary. And the one that really seemed to resonate with people was by 35, you should have saved twice your salary. So when that article came out, there was a huge, apparently, I'm on Twitter, but I'm not a real avid user, but apparently there was a huge backlash by a ton of young people, millennials in particular, saying that that was impossible. And it got me thinking about, is it impossible? And what would it take to actually do that, to save twice your salary by age 35? And one of the tough things about doing that is that it's a moving target. So your salary changes a lot. You get cost of living adjustments. You might have bonuses. You might have, you might change jobs and get a big bump once in a while. So what we did to prepare it, I sat down with my assistant and we kind of came up with a guideline as to how to look at it. And we did the ending salary based on a certain percentage raise. So we looked at if you got an annual adjustment of 1%, annual increase of 2%, annual increase of 3%. And we started with $25,000. $50,000 and $75,000 salaries. And what we found was that the only thing that really mattered was the percentage increase that you get every year, because the thing that you have to solve for is the ending value of your salary. So you have to project what you're going to make at 35 in order to do this. And we found that if you start as a 22-year-old, and I picked that age because if you graduate high school at 18 and go to college for 4 years, you're going to get out when you're 22. So I picked 22 as the starting age and ending year of age 35. You would have to save about 16.2% of your income to have twice your salary at age 35.
The old rule of thumb is pretty high. Usually been 10 to 15.
Yeah, but that's pretty high. I mean, especially during those years.
Yeah, when you're fighting all those factors, household formation, children, cars, all that stuff, yeah, that's a big number.
But we did not assume any rate of return. So if you assumed a 6% rate of return, that number goes down to about 11% of your salary.
Now you're talking.
Yep. But we didn't include employer match. What if you have an employer match in your 401k? So we assumed a 3% match, and what we found was that that brought that number down to 8% of your salary that you have to save.
It's getting less impossible.
Yeah, for sure. And so even if you don't do that, let's say that you only save 6% of your salary, where would you end up? If you got annualized increases of 2% from age 22 to 35, you would end up at 35 having 1.63 times your salary saved, which is not bad. I mean, you're not, you're within spitting distance of that 2 times your salary. So that's just doing 6%, getting your employer match of 3%. And never increasing it, so not it's really not as hard as people were making it out to be, in my opinion.
Now I've got one to add to that.
Mm-hmm.
Make those same assumptions. Only every raise you get,
you go up a percent.
You go up a percent, or you go up a half of your raise, or anything like that.
We did that.
Factor that.
We
in.
Actually did that.
How'd that come out?
It came out a little bit better. We found that with at a 2% increase per year, you would end up with 1.7 times your salary when you were 35.
Okay. Well, that's getting right down to close,
yeah,
isn't it?
But you haven't even really gotten into the power of compounding yet.
Right.
So that would, I think that if you did that, you would eventually end up on track.
Yeah, I would think you're right. I'm not sure where they come up with that number, but it doesn't sound unreasonable to me. I've got some numbers on what it takes to be wealthy now.
Okay.
You know, I'll do that right after the break. Okay, very interesting. I like that. Adam, like I've always done, loves to ask himself questions he doesn't know the answer to and figure them out. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Vanway Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanway.
And I'm Adam Vanway.
This segment brought to you by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. Things are growing like crazy, and especially in this rain. Give Troy a call at 662-9794. Trivia question still out there. $1,000 put into Facebook 6 years ago yesterday when it debuted are worth how many $100 today? And we know that 9,000 is too high and 1,000 is too low. All right. What does it take to be rich in America? Well, funny I should ask, because I have in my hand a recent survey by Suzanne Woolley of ThinkAdvisor. Interviewed 1,000 Americans between the ages of 21 and 75. So this is a pretty broad brush we're painting with here, folks. But to be financially comfortable in America today, according to the survey, requires an average of $1.4 million, up from $1.2 million a year ago. Difference probably is that gas is more expensive this year?
No,
probably not. People getting smarter? Yes.
Maybe.
Yeah. To be wealthy in America, the average now is $2.4 million, and that has not changed in a couple of years, strangely enough.
That is interesting.
Mm-hmm. What percentage, I didn't ask this to Adam. I wouldn't let him answer it before he answered it on air because I'd be curious. What percent of people interviewed choose having lots of money as their definition of being wealthy?
Should be 100, honestly.
Adam says, there's no other definition.
That is what wealthy is.
11%.
Makes no sense.
No. I think that's what caught my eye in this article originally. Really, people? Hey, talk about altruistic. All right, so some said, 62% overall said that spending time with family made them feel wealthy. Well, there's nothing wrong with that. I absolutely agree. Money is fuel, as some people say. Life's little luxuries also matter. Some people cite having luxuries as making them feel wealthy. Having meals out or food delivered, 41% said it makes them feel wealthy. Having services such as Netflix, Spotify, or Amazon Prime made life feel richer for 33%, particularly for millennials at 44%, and 23% of boomers. Millennials displayed some youthful optimism when it came to their future. Some 64% believe they'll be wealthy, the cash kind of wealthy, at some point, compared to only 22% of
boomers.
Are
you sure they were going for that definition, or 64% thought someday they'd have Spotify?
No, they were specific about the money.
Okay.
That's very optimistic, I think.
That is pretty optimistic.
But do you know 49% of millennials rebalance their portfolios regularly?
Do you know that 85% of millennials actually save for retirement? I think it's 82 or 85, something like that.
I credit the Van Wee Financial Hour.
It's pretty impressive, actually. It's higher than my generation and way higher than your generation.
The same percentage of millennials, 24%, felt very confident about reaching their financial goals. That number, I would think, should be a little bit higher. On the other hand, if you're not confident about doing it, it might make you pay more attention to it. So ultimately, may be a good thing. All right, 52% of boomers said they didn't have a plan for their finances because they didn't have enough money to have a plan. Well, you got to have a plan to start putting money together.
Yeah, if you have no money, you need to plan more than the person with a lot of money.
Exactly. So that makes no sense to me. Even if your plan is, I'm going to start a Roth IRA, and when I start making X amount of money and get into this tax bracket, I'm going to switch over to a regular IRA, or I'm going to go to work for someone that has a 401k, and I'm at least going to contribute to the match. That's a financial plan, people. So the plan to accumulate money. Yes. You have a plan to have enough cash in the bank that if you need new tires or something, you can go out and buy them. That's part of a financial plan. Anyway, the American dream is not dead, according to the survey. And at least some people agree that making money is the path to bliss. 49% of respondents said that saving and investing is the key to wealth. 40% choose hard work being the key to wealth. And you know there's got to be a bottom line, right?
Mm-hmm.
11%, however, cited luck
as the key to getting wealthy?
Yeah.
Well, good luck with that.
Yeah. Well, you know what we call that 11% eventually? Destitute. Right?
That's not a good financial plan.
All right. You want to follow up a little bit on why aren't people accumulating enough money? What is it they're spending it on that maybe they should think about?
Well, the reason cited on Twitter, the reaction to that Market Watch article that I mentioned, were they're really varied. They went from the flat-out excuses, oh, life is so expensive, cost of living's gone up, and wages haven't risen, which those are valid points. It is true. But I think that every generation, especially when they're starting out, feels the same way. I know I did when I got out of college. I'm sure you felt the same way.
Absolutely.
I've heard you tell stories about it. So this is not unique to your generation.
Nope.
Don't think
we're not picking on anybody.
Yeah, it's not just the millennials, but they're just the ones on Twitter who were responding. So that kind of makes sense. But they ranged even further to one young lady cited the gender pay gap as the reason she couldn't save money. They were just all over the board.
Lame.
But honestly, the reason that that people don't save money is it's simply lifestyle choices. You if you make it a priority, you can do it. If you don't make it a priority, you won't do it. It's simple as that. Once you get used to spending that money monthly, you will never go into saving without forcing yourself to do it. So the key, in my opinion, to doing it is to, from day one, if you put away 15% of your salary and you never even had it, you will adjust your lifestyle accordingly.
And I'll tell you the other thing, and this is one of the reasons why when we switched over gradually over time since the 70s from a defined benefit system, in other words, traditional pensions, to a defined contribution system, the 401ks, people got more interested in saving because they could see their own balances. And they can watch those balances grow. And I've witnessed this over and over and over in our day jobs, and Adam has too.
Mm-hmm.
You start to get people looking at that number and anticipating that number getting bigger and dedicating themselves to having that number be bigger.
No doubt.
It is contagious when you start looking at the power of compounding.
It was for me. I can tell you I got a little bit of a late start because I went back to grad school 2 years out of college, and I used my savings that I had from my first job to pay for part of that. So I really didn't get started until I was in my late 20s, I would say. And I still made it. I was actually at 2 times my salary at age 35. So I made it, and I started late, but I was really dedicated in my early 30s to putting away more than I felt like I could afford.
Yeah, we went through something similar too when we left the manufacturing world behind, moved to Florida, and started over from scratch in a new industry. It's very expensive to start up a business that will pay you back. So you burn through a lot of money, People ask me all the time, how do you start getting on in your business? I said, well, first you go get a job and make $1 million. Then you start a business like ours, and you go through it all, and you hope by the time it's gone, you're starting to build it again. If it works, you're in business, and if it doesn't, bye.
There are better ways today, but back when you started, mm-hmm. it really wasn't as there are more opportunities now.
Exactly. Thank God, because there's more need. The need for financial advisors. If you like people, if you like numbers, if you're educated, and you like the dealing with the science of money and the esoteric parts of having money and making money and saving money, it is a wonderful career, let me tell you.
And we actually have a local degree program at UNF that mm-hmm. is a financial planning degree program. So yep. the opportunity is here locally.
Okay, I spoke a little earlier about the guy who was ripping off people with trust deeds. A trust deed is similar to a mortgage, but it involves a third-party trustee. And one thing you know about mortgages is they're not very transparent. If everybody on all sides of a trust deed is doing the right thing, you're probably going to do fine. The only thing you should be able to expect is a rate of interest that is reasonably substantial. Don't expect to make a killing on them. The problem comes in the lack of transparency when one of the people, one or more of the people, isn't doing what they're saying they're doing. And that can involve tremendous losses on real estate, including foreclosures and so on. It's never a liquid investment. It's not a safe investment. It's for people with a lot of money who are trying to get some kind of a return out of it. The problem, again, is that lack of transparency. You can't go to an independent third-party website, look up your money and see what's happened to it any time of any day that you want. If you cannot see your money, folks, do not expect it to be there. How many of those rich people that put in $71 million had more than a passing knowledge of trust deeds? While I can't answer that from any hard and fast statistic, I'm going to guess none of them, because that's the kind of people that would invest in a scheme like that. All right, $4,800 worth of Facebook today for every 1,000 you put in 6 years ago. Not world record territory, but a darn fine return. Yep. But thanks for listening. See you next week. This is the Van Lee Financial Hour.